Number 9, report on recent work from the city auditor, utility payments, Prosper Portland, and Portland Housing Bureau.
Colleagues, we have with us today the auditor, and she is going to present the results of a number of audits. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Commissioners, I am City Auditor Mary Hall Caballero, and I'm here today with Senior Management Auditors Jennifer Scott and Elizabeth Pape. And I'd also like to take the opportunity to introduce Kari Guy in her new capacity as the Director of Audit Services. This is the last time she's going to appear before you with an individual audit report that for which she served as the auditor in charge, because she's going to be in charge of all of them now. Today marks our second presentation of audit results since I've been city auditor. You may recall that our plan is to come to council periodically throughout the year to provide brief overviews of our most recent reports. And my hope is that commissioners in charge of bureaus that are the subject of our audits take our results in the spirits in which we intend them, which is for the city to become more effective, efficient, and equitable. We also hope to use these opportunities to speak to you as a group, to highlight themes across audits that can apply to operations and programs, whether they are the subject of any particular audit that we are presenting. We have the results from three audits to present today, Utility Payment Assistance, Prosper Portland, and the Housing Bureau. And I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer Scott, who led the Utility Payment Assistance audit.
Hi, my name is Jenny Scott. I'm a senior management auditor and was the lead on the utility payment assistance audit.
Could you bring that microphone a little closer?
Which was released in October of last year. In this audit, we reviewed the city's utility payment assistance program to determine if it is an effective approach to assist payment-troubled water and sewer customers. We found that program improvements would enable the city to assist more customers. The Water Bureau shuts off customers' water to compel payment of delinquent bills. In 2015, the year we looked at most closely during our audit, there were about 4,500 shutoffs of single-family residential accounts for nonpayment. 40% of these shutoffs were accounts that were shut off more than once during the year. As the light blue bar in the graph shows, total shutoffs have been trending downward, while the dark blue bar shows that the number of repeat shutoffs have remained relatively steady. In other words, the proportion of repeat shutoffs to total shutoffs is increasing. While most customers' water was reconnected the same day it was shut off, as shown in red, 8% of shutoffs we analyzed were without water for more than 1 month. The Water Bureau could not determine if these homes were vacant or occupied because they were not analyzing customer shutoff data. To assist low-income customers, the Bureaus of Water and Environmental Services introduced the low-income discount in 1995. The program is managed by the Water Bureau's Customer Service Division. The low-income discount program was established with an enrollment goal of 10,000 customers. This goal has never been reached. Industry experts recommend that utilities analyze customer payment trends and possible reasons for non-payment to help design their assistance programs. Additionally, the Portland Plan instructs bureaus to collect data needed to identify disparities, understand the conditions and challenges facing communities experiencing them. The Water Bureau was not analyzing customer data as recommended when we performed our audit work. Without data, the Bureau is unable to identify disparities in shutoffs and assistance, tailor assistance to meet customer need, focus outreach to customers most likely to need it, measure the impact of assistance, and make corresponding improvements to their program. We also found that improvements in program guidelines and training for all staff involved in the debt collection and program application process are needed to ensure consistency. We also found that payment assistance is not available to Portlanders who may need it most. Since 1999, Portlanders living in multifamily housing have been twice as likely to have incomes below the poverty level than residents living in single-family housing. However, the low-income discount program is not an option for Portlanders who live in multifamily housing. For example, the single-family home at the top of the slide is served by 1 meter. The residents have an account with the Water Bureau, and if they meet the income requirements, they would be eligible for payment assistance. the residents of the multifamily structure at the bottom of the graphic are not eligible for payment assistance even if they meet the program's income requirements. This is because their building is served by one meter and their landlord is the direct Water Bureau customer. The residents of the building pay for water, sewer, and stormwater as part of their rent. Single-family homes make up the bulk of Portland's housing stock, but the proportion of multifamily is growing. In 2015, 84% of new housing production were apartments and condominiums, and demographers expect this trend to continue. Ensuring that the discount program is effective is important since demand for payment assistance is likely to grow. Although Portland's combined utility rates meet the federal guidelines for affordability, rates are increasing and will continue to rise as the city begins to treat water to meet federal requirements. Additionally, as the graph shows, Portland's poverty rate has grown since 2000. Our report contained four recommendations for the Water Bureau. First, to continue to study how to extend assistance to residents of multifamily housing. The second is to collect and use data to identify disparities, develop and measure effective payment assistance objectives and options, and to tailor outreach strategies. The third is to focus outreach for payment assistance on customers most likely to be in need and eligible. And the last is to strengthen training and program guidelines to ensure that customers receive consistent information and awards of payment assistance. The Water Bureau recently announced a number of changes designed to address many of these recommendations.
So I had a question. Oh, do you want to go ahead and do all your...
I'd like to give Commissioner Fish an opportunity to respond prior to moving on.
Maybe we should do it each one just while it's fresh, because there's going to be a sea of information.
Well, if I could ask my question, then maybe that'll inform your comments.
Commissioner Saltzman.
So I was struck by the statistic that over the percentage of households that have had disconnections for over 30 days, mm-hmm. and the Water Bureau doesn't know much about those accounts. Mm-hmm. So has that changed as a result of your audit? And maybe that's a good lead into Commissioner Fish, but I think we should know more about this, because 30 days without water is a very long time. And I worry if these houses are occupied, if they're occupied by families with children. In fact, when I was Water Bureau Commissioner, we had a situation like that, and we called the Department of Human Services Child Abuse Hotline because we felt having water, no water, is a form of child abuse, mm-hmm. and neglect. So,
well, thank you, Dan. That's a very helpful way to tee it up. As you know, because you were previously the Water Bureau, a lot of these houses are abandoned houses. They're zombie houses. They're houses where we cannot locate someone who is a responsible party, even when we send someone to the house. But in light of this report, we're going to do some things differently. So let me address it specifically. First, I want to acknowledge that about a year ago, the Water Bureau put together a team to look at these questions, and it's been ably led by Liam Frost and others. Second, when the auditor's report came out, it really framed and highlighted some of the biggest challenges we faced. So I want to begin by thanking the auditor, Mary Hall Caballero, and her excellent team for the comprehensive and thoughtful work you did on this audit. Audits are valuable tools for the city to assess where we are and how we can do better. And I want to commend you for drilling down on the utilities financial assistance program and setting forth some recommendations which we believe provide common sense guidance. As you alluded in your presentation, I've directed the Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Services to implement the recommendations and to work to increase the number of eligible customers that we serve. As part of the current budget process, our two utility bureaus are working with our oversight bodies, the Portland Utility Board and the Oregon Citizens Utility Board, to review and implement important changes, including a new multifamily housing utility payment assistance program. This is a program which will get around the challenge we faced for years, including back to Dan's time, of not being able to offer the discount to someone that doesn't have a meter. Enhancing program management and outreach with highly trained staff, increasing the existing crisis voucher, and adjusting the low-income discount to reflect housing size. All of those came out of your recommendations. And Auditor, I want to just specifically thank you and your team for the good work you did. And we will be having a work session, I think, in February to lay out a comprehensive response to this audit.
Commissioner, I really appreciate your commitment to embracing those recommendations. I think that they point up some critical issues for the Bureau and for the city, and I very much appreciate that.
Thank you.
So is the Water Bureau now analyzing customer shutoff data?
We are implementing all the recommendations, including collecting data on shutoff data.
Okay, so we know more than anecdotally that the households going without water for more than 30 days. I mean, you mentioned that many of them are zombie or foreclosed homes, but
do we know that, or are we just using anecdote? No, we send people to a number of these homes to try to find out what the situation is. It's a large number of homes. We are in the process of collecting the data so we can be more effective in how we administer this. No one wants to shut off someone's water. Under the charter, we cannot provide free water for an extended period of time to someone who doesn't pay for it. And sometimes there's shell games played between landlords and other owners of property and tenants, and that creates a challenge. But we are in the process of collecting data, and we will have a complete report to council at a work session in February.
Yeah. And I want to thank you, Commissioner, for offering up that work session. I think that's a great idea, and I look forward to it. And the auditors certainly raised some compelling issues, and I see that as all of our responsibility.
Well, and Mayor, let me also say that the issue that has eluded prior commissioners in charge, which is how do you extend a discount program to someone that doesn't have a meter? Because our program is pegged to usage. And without a meter, the alternative is really an entitlement program, and that has challenges in terms of verification and staffing and the like. And as you know, this is an area where we have been sued over these kinds of programs, so we have to tread lightly. We think what we're going to be announcing in February is a significant breakthrough in how to target the most needy households using our resources in a very targeted way, not creating additional bureaucracy, but instead using an existing program. And our lawyers say that it meets all the applicable legal standards. So we're very excited, and we'll be presenting that to council in February.
So I just want to be sure. So at the February work session, we will have the statistical data about households that have had their water shut off for more than 30 days, about are they occupied or not.
Dan, you can send me a note with whatever information you want at that work session, and it would be provided to you.
Okay.
Since this is the first time you've expressed interest, if you want to put in writing to me whatever data you'd like to see, I would be happy to provide it.
Well, I think the purpose of the auditor presenting audits to us as a council is to provoke some discussion about the audits, and I think that's what we're doing here. So I don't appreciate being told to send it to you in writing when we're discussing a topic here in public that I think has great public interest.
So it sounds like in February we're going to continue this conversation, and it would also be helpful for me. I haven't had a chance to actually sit down with the audit team on this particular issue, Commissioner Fish is saying he's looking at a proposed model that he'd like to bring back to the City Council in February for conversations, and I look forward to that. I think that's great. I'd also be curious to know what other municipalities are doing, and I assume you had a chance to take a look at the models in other parts of the country and perhaps even around the world, or is that not true?
Well, it's an issue that jurisdictions across the country have struggled to deal with.
Has anybody hit on an answer that you think is particularly germane?
I'd have to get back to you on that.
Okay, that'd be helpful, and maybe that could even be part of the conversation.
Mayor, there is one obvious fix, which I'm not suggesting we pursue, and I don't think that council would necessarily embrace, but we could mandate that there be individual meters in all future multifamily housing. The program from its inception has been pegged to usage, and the discount then follows. Now, we have other things we can offer people, crisis vouchers, we can do emergency things, we can replace toilets with low flush toilets, energy efficient toilets, we can do all kinds of things. But once you get away from a meter, you're sort of entering the area of an entitlement program.
Yeah,
and administering an entitlement program on this scale requires a lot of resources, a lot of staff, and very few jurisdictions have gone that direction. Having a mandate around individual meters potentially raises the cost of construction for low-income housing, so there's some pushback there. What we're going to propose instead is using an existing program to get the dollars to the neediest people, a program that this council has previously embraced as an efficient way of reaching low-income tenants. And again, our legal team believes this is a legal and practical way of expanding our discount program.
And so not to get too far ahead of ourselves, because I really do want to give the team time to get to February to make the presentation, but it sounds like, having read the audit, that would be consistent with what you would be suggesting in terms of filling the hole.
I think that the recommendations in the audit are broad enough that they could encompass a lot of different ways to reach the solutions, and we don't pick out anyone in particular. And so I would think that the work session in February would illuminate a lot of those kinds of options for the council to consider.
Great. Commissioner Udaly?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Commissioner Fish for continuing to pursue this issue. I know it's been on his to-do list for a long time to expand the assistance program. He very kindly invited my team to join in the conversation, and honestly, we couldn't come up with a viable solution either short of the 1 meter for every unit, which isn't necessarily feasible retroactively and is possibly cost prohibitive moving forward. And I would also like to say, as someone who has struggled off and on to keep all of my utilities on and pay my rent, that the Water Bureau, and I'm not just saying this because you're my colleague, has been the most reasonable utility to deal with. So thank you, Water Bureau, for that.
Thank you. Yeah. Great. Anything else, Commissioner, on this one?
No. We look forward to coming and making a presentation and answering all your questions.
And I want to thank second Commissioner Udaly. I want to thank Commissioner Fish for having previewed this and taken it seriously, and I look forward to that February work session. So thank you, Commissioner Fish. Next of your items.
So next we're going to discuss an audit of Prosper Portland. My name is Elizabeth
Pape. Move the mic a little closer.
And I'm a senior management auditor, and I led the Prosper Portland audit released in November. In 2016, Prosper Portland owned or controlled 80 properties, which generated $1.7 million in net revenue. But by 2031, the agency hopes to increase revenue to $16 million. We reviewed Prosper Portland's real estate management in 2016 to determine if the agency was ready to meet the income goal, to see if practices aligned with strategic goals, and how staff oversaw the day-to-day management of third-party operators. We found that real estate management was not aligned with strategic goals and that there was limited monitoring of operators. And this is a video to summarize our audit findings. So what we found was that at the strategic level, the property management was not aligned with strategic goals, that there weren't programmatic or income goals for each property or for the portfolio as a whole. We also found that Prosper Portland had not regularly reviewed properties to create financial goals, and one reason for that was that they have a financial investment committee, which is charged with setting goals for properties, but they were only reviewing properties at purchase and disposition. So properties that had been purchased before the policy went into place had not been reviewed, and I think about a third of the properties in the portfolio had never been reviewed by the financial investment committee. And lastly, there were no equity plans for the properties. One of the goals of Prosper Portland was to increase equity, but they had not. They had a form and a policy to review all of their significant programs for equitable outcomes. Yet they hadn't documented those conversations about their properties. And then at the more day-to-day level, staff had not performed risk assessments for each of the properties. One reason was that a lot of the properties had, there really wasn't a high risk profile for properties at the time. This was sort of not one of Prosper Portland's main ways of making money. But as they transition into relying more on real estate income, they need to understand that the risk profiles are changing for the properties. And so they need to perform a risk assessment for each profile, each property, and then develop contract provisions related to budgeting, reporting, and protecting physical assets commensurate with the risks of the properties, and then adequately monitor the third-party operated properties. So what does this mean for you? I want to go back.
Sorry about that.
To this slide.
Yeah.
As tax increment financing declines for Prosper Portland, Prosper Portland will need to make a lot more money from real estate if it isn't going to rely on general fund appropriations. But it has to balance the demands of financial self-preservation with programmatic goals for equity. In the past, without financial goals, the real estate portfolio generated less than 1/9 of the revenue required in the future. And in the past, without a focus on equity, the agency contributed to gentrification and displaced communities. So we recommend that Prosper Portland create program and income goals for each property, schedule regular reviews by the investment committee, document equity considerations, and at a day-to-day level, they should perform risk assessments, develop contract provisions related to risk, and adequately monitor third-party operated properties.
Thank you.
Very good. And colleagues, I'll just draw your, I won't belabor it, but there's a four-page response to this in the back of the audit that I jointly signed along with Kimberly Branham, the director of Prosper Portland. The long and short of it is we agree with the audit findings, and I'm pleased that under Director Branham's leadership, we've already begun to address many, although not all of the issues, and we're committed to this. So I would encourage you at your leisure to read the letter as well.
Can I ask a question? Can we infer from this audit that if these recommendations are adopted and there is a more robust accounting for the properties and the kinds of things that you recommend, that you see no impediment to Prosper Portland continuing to change its business model, i.e., to become more of a property holder and income generator? So you're taking no position on the question of the mission and the future direction of the Bureau, which increasingly is, I think, is designed to provide a sustainable funding source so they can do their work. Your audit is limited to how they manage their existing portfolio. Is that fair?
I think that's how I would describe it. Our audit scope was limited to how they're managing their portfolio, and I really couldn't comment on the rest of their...
The larger policy issue.
Policy issues, yeah.
Thank you.
All right, last but not least, again, I'm Kari Guy.
I'm sorry, I feel like you deserve more credit. Thank you. I thought it was an excellent audit, and I appreciate it. And it was very detailed, and I think you focused on the right issues, and you provided the details in a way that made it, I think, easier for us to respond thoughtfully to each of the comments that was made. So thank you for that. It was an audit very well done.
And she can present on the fly when the slides don't work. So that's worth it.
As
it's worth
well
a
she
lot.
Did.
So back to housing, the housing follow-up audit, which was actually released yesterday. In 2014, we conducted an audit of Housing Bureau's housing loan programs for multifamily housing. And one finding from the audit was that the annual review process wasn't working well. The loan payments were inconsistent, and there was a backlog of inspections, and reviews generally weren't timely. Housing Bureau had recognized the same problems when we were doing that audit, and they had already started to work to improve it. So we followed up this year, or actually last year, to see if the annual review system had improved, and it clearly had. Housing Bureau now updates the policies that guide their annual review periodically to address emerging issues, and those guidelines are approved by Council. I think the most recent ones you approved were in November, so as things change, they're updating their policies. They have also created better tracking systems to ensure timely review, and they perform trend analysis by borrower to try to do sort of an early intervention, early warning if there's financial problems emerging by borrower. For each housing project, they also examine detail in three areas. They want to make sure the property serves the intended population, that it's maintained in good condition, and that it remains financially viable and is current on loan payments. During our audit, housing staff were still working through a backlog of reviews. Some issues, such as the methodology around calculating cash flow payments, continue to cause challenges, and monitoring resident services may need a little further adjustment. But clearly, they made significant progress across the board. And moving forward, we just encourage the Bureau to consider the annual monitoring requirements at the time of project approval for really any project and make sure they're staffed up to do that annual review.
Well, again, thank you for a very thorough audit and a good follow-on. And I want to thank everybody at the Housing Bureau who's been working tirelessly to improve the monitoring of city investments. I'm very proud of the work they've done. Obviously, this is a very positive audit and report, and I look forward to even more progress in the year ahead. So thank you for a great follow-on.
I would I want to thank the auditor for doing this. I really think this is a great innovation of you bringing your audits to the council, to the public, and in the full light of day, talking about them. As you can see, sometimes it causes us discomfort, and, you know, to me, that's a healthy thing. So I think your topics, the audit services topics of audits, are well chosen. They're timely and insightful. So I just want to thank you for doing this and look forward to the next presentation.
Thank you. Could I point out one thing just to follow on to your comment, Commissioner, that the Prosper Portland audit is an example of what these opportunities that I'm looking for, where we can do what we call readiness audits. Is the city ready to do something like the Portland building renovation, or Prosper Portland put a tremendous amount of work into creating a strategic plan, which we always think is a great idea. And when they identified the direction that they were going to head, the point of that audit was to get in and say, are you ready to do that? Are you on the path to achieve your goals? And so I think that those are a couple of examples that are a little bit different for auditing. Normally we're a backward-looking organization. And the housing audit is a more formal kind of follow-up than we normally do. Normally, we're checking back with management. How are you doing on your recommendations? Are you implemented? Are you in process? And what I'd like to do is to pick out a handful of audits that we've done in the past and circle back around and do a formal review of the work and to produce a report so that we can come in and have some continued conversation. And I think the Housing Bureau deserves credit for really putting in a lot of work to implement those recommendations, and we really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Mayor, I want to just add a comment.
Please,
if I could.
Commissioner Fish.
I've been here long enough now that I can remember when an audit issued, particularly an unflattering one, and it kind of got filed somewhere, collected moss, and there were some stern looks in the building when people from your office came into contact with other people. That's changed. I think it's changed because there is a much healthier and more respectful relationship between the council and your office. It's changed because you fought for and were successful in achieving independence for your office, which was frankly long overdue. And with that independence came a clear demarcation of lines. It changed in the willingness, the receptivity of you and your immediate predecessor to consider doing certain audits to frankly affirmatively help the council deal with some difficult issues. And I'm thinking about the spot audit, or I don't know if you call it a spot audit, but the single issue audit that was done, for example, of some cost overruns at a BES building. And when that audit came out and it produced a lot of discomfort, we actually did a work session where we had the chance to have the auditor at the table discussing the results, and out of that came a series of very significant actions that were taken to address those problems. And then most recently, with big changes occurring at the Regional Arts and Culture Council, including a leadership transition, I want to thank you for being receptive to the request that the mayor and I made that you consider doing a performance audit of them. There's never been one done. And there's nothing like a leadership transition period, I think, to make it additionally relevant. The new leader will come in with an audit, good, bad, or indifferent, that will help that person be successful. So there has been in my opinion, there has been a significant shift in the tone of the relationship, and I consider that to be a leadership issue, and I credit you and the mayor for that. It has not always been so in this building. And I think the fact that the fruits of that is that there is now, I think, a well-established pattern of embracing the audits, embracing the recommendations, and then doing follow-up to see if we get it right. More of a partnership, even though obviously you are an independent officer. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Very good. Thank you. I'll accept a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fish, a second from Commissioner Fritz to accept the report, which are the collective audits from the Office of the Auditor. Please call the roll.
Fritz.
I join my colleagues in thanking the auditor for not only for these excellent audits and thank you to the staff who've done them, but also for bringing these reports to council for a public review and discussion. I share the mayor's value of vocally discussing the findings. I remember back to the November 16 audit of the Office of Neighbourhood Involvement, and it would have been so great to have been able to have a conversation about that audit, obviously with the timing at the end of that year and the changeover in administration, and also that was before the auditor instituted this practice. That didn't happen, leaving only the option of dueling back and forth letters and or in the press, which is neither of which is what I have ever engaged in or tried not to. So I think this is a very constructive way to improve the city's processes and to provide accountability and to have that respectful relationship between the independent auditor and the members of the council that is the way it should be. So thank you very much for all of this. Aye.
Fish.
4 years ago when we had another change in the mayor's seat, it's my understanding that the then auditor and the new mayor did not meet until in the fall of the first year. And if that's true, it is quite a statement. And I know, Mayor, that you made it a priority when you came into office that you met with the auditor, the independent auditor, as soon as you entered office. And I know that you had some conversations about how you wanted the relationship to work. And I think it has had a significant impact on the way in which the auditor's office and the council has interacted. There were some hearings last year that I thought were deeply regrettable, that were highly personal, and that resulted in a kind of the public, I think, scratching its head, wondering why was the council and the auditor's office at each other's throat, when in fact the auditor performs an essential function of providing independent oversight. And I believe the reforms that the voters adopted have now made clear that they want that enshrined in perpetuity. So at the end of the day, I think leadership needs to be called out here for changing the relationship and the tone. And as a result, these audits are being brought forward, are being acted on in a timely manner. And at the end of the day, that's good for the people we serve. So I want to acknowledge and thank you for that. Aye.
Saltzman.
Thank you. Aye.
Daily.
Thank you. And it's not very often that someone says they look forward to being audited, but I truly do. I think the auditor's office is able to take the kinds of deep dives that we don't necessarily have the time to do, especially if a bureau is not in our portfolio. It's also extremely helpful to the public for understanding what's going on in the city. And so, yes, I look forward to, you know, let me know if you're going to audit one of my bureaus anytime soon, and I look forward to meeting with you. Aye.
Wheeler.
Commissioner Fish is correct that I have a particular view of audits. I think audits are a critical management tool. I think in the absence of objective third-party viewing what it is you do and why you do it and how you do it, It is very hard to evolve. You really need that outside look in. And in fact, Commissioner Fish, I believe I met with the auditor two or three times before I took office. In fact, in terms of framing the issues for my administration, we relied heavily on the audit reports, by the way, all of which are available upstairs. If people have an interest, the auditor keeps a collection right by the front door. For the most part, it's really excellent reading. I want to be clear. I don't always agree with all audit findings. If I get to those types of situations, I'll be very clear about it. But as the auditor herself said, it is very important that we engage in these conversations and that we have these discussions in public. And as Commissioner Fish rightly pointed out, it was a very important thing that this city council did and the public did to give the auditor heightened independence. I think it puts us in good standing to be able to say that we truly do have an independent third party looking over our shoulders. Again, I'm very happy with the work that the Housing Bureau has done. It was a great audit. The audit of Prosper Portland, which is in my portfolio, has a lot of challenges in it, not the least of which is the TIF cliff, but also there are issues around managing the real estate portfolio. There are issues of development. There's issues of capacity. And there are core issues around strategic direction, all of those things which we look forward to addressing in the future. So thank you, Madam Auditor. Thank you to your team. And without a vote, aye, and the report is accepted. Colleagues,